This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass podcast.
All right, so welcome into the Baseball Hour podcast. If you remember a year ago at this time, we had the chance to speak with Alex Cora, Red Sox manager, about the upcoming season. He's kind enough to join us again. So, Alex, thanks for doing this. Let me start here. A year ago, I remember asking you, what should we expect from the Red Sox going into the season? They were coming off a bad year, and which you were not a part of. But things have obviously changed a lot. So now you tell me, are the expectations the same, or have they gone up?
They're always up. You know, one thing that we have to do is try to keep improving, right? We have a good baseball team. We're in a better position than we were last year. But obviously the division is in a better position than it was last year. You know, there's four good teams that, we all can make it to the playoffs. And, as you know, in baseball, anything can happen, right? We lost three in a row to Baltimore to start the season, and we lost two out of three at the end of the season against them. And they got some intriguing pitching. I still believe there's room for improvement. We made some strides defensively, adding Story at second base. That's a plus. You've seen Rafi playing defense the last month. We always talk about the potential of him becoming a good defender. It seems like he finally got it, you know, and he's been amazing. I think overall in spring training, we have played some clean baseball, some solid baseball. And, the goal is to make it to the playoffs and win the World Series, as always. But to do that, we have to continue to do things that, you know, we preach, you know, it's clean baseball, be smarter around the bases. And obviously, as you know, offensively, we will always hit, regardless of what we do. This team, this organization has hit for a while. The pitching staff, I think we're capable. So, as always, play good defense, pitch, because the offense, I think, is going to be one of the best in the American League.
All right, tell you what, let me start with the defense, because this obviously has been a point of emphasis. It's clear that Bradley's back, Story's at second. You mentioned Devers. Let me just start quickly with Devers, because in the little bit that I've seen, he looks like he's playing better over there. And obviously, you know, we can only see a handful of games from up here, but it sounds like you've seen an improvement at third base.
Yes, we made some adjustments as far as our program. Towards the end of the season last year, actually Iggy, Jose Iglesias, we were talking about, you know, taking ground balls and making – in spring training, we told them to wear spikes from day one to the guys. Instead of wearing running shoes or turf shoes, they start wearing spikes. And what we were trying to do is for them to actually have their feet right and have quick moves, you know, be quick to the baseball. Talking to Rafi, he made a conscious effort in the offseason to work in his defense as much as he worked in his offense. Is paying off. But there's some subtle adjustments that we did with the program. Early on, they didn't take so many ground balls on the field. Everything was drill-oriented, moving the feet, and kind of like in soccer where they had the ronda, you know, like they're – So we call it actually it's four corners, and this is some drills we got it from minor league camp when we got here early, and it was like going back to basics, and it's working. Xander is moving well; his first step has improved, which is great. And I do believe having Trevor in the system now, you know, the defensive talk is going to be part of it. You know, we always talk about the offense, but I think having this guy who's elite defender. An elite defender, he's going to help everybody out. In the outfield, as you know, Jackie, Enrique, and Alex, that trio is pretty solid. And we expect them to catch everything, obviously, and make sound decisions in the outfield.
So you can understand why I ask about Devers, because he's at a critical stage of his career now, right? Like in terms of everybody projects, myself included, where's this guy going to end up long term? We know the bat is elite. You know, the bat to ball ability is off the charts. He hit a home run off the weekend where, you know, he's basically hit the ball out in front of his front foot. So yeah. Like, you know, he has a unique ability, an elite ability to square the ball up. But if he's long-term at third base versus long-term at say DH, I don't need to tell you, there's in terms of long-term salary there, there's tens of millions of dollars at a difference. So he clearly, I mean, does he want to prove that he can play third base? Is this a thing for him?
I believe so. He won't go public, right? And he doesn't tell us, but you see, you know, the way he's going about it, and is impressive. The work he's doing in the mornings, the work he's putting in practice, and the way he's going about it in games, it tells you the whole story. And his footwork, he's into every pitch. Usually when you're a good offensive player, right, you take pitches off defensively, and that's not the case. We talk a little bit in November. We show him a program. We show him a few things that we have numbers-wise. And the biggest, I mean, obviously it's a big problem, is the only problem that Rafi has defensively, because he has a good arm, he has a good first step, he has range, is out conversion, right? Like, he will throw the ball away in a great play and all that. And he was, in our numbers, in our metrics, whatever you want to call it, he was average or above average in a lot of things, but below average in out conversion. So he's getting to the ball, he's making the plays, he's going far to his left or right. The only thing he wasn't doing was making the throw to first base and getting out. So, I mean, to be a good defender, you have to do that. And we talked to him about it, and he put work, and you can see it. So I think he understands who he is in the game and what he wants, right? He wants to be, you know, in that conversation up there with all those young guys, and, Soto and Guerrero, Tatis, all those guys. And if you see Rafi's career, quote unquote, right, he's been amazing. He's been amazing offensively. Somehow, some way, he's underrated, right? And people don't know who he is. But, Tony, to be honest with you, we were talking about it yesterday. And now when you play other teams, when you play in games, everybody gravitates to Rafi. Like, from the opposition, they're in awe with Rafi. I saw Riley yesterday after Rafi hit the home run. He looked in the dugout. He's like, how? You know, like, who's this guy? So I think the name is out there. Obviously, he made the All-Star game last year. But he understands who he is and what he wants. And hopefully, you know, as an organization, we can get to a point that we're going to have this guy for a lot of years.
Well, you know, and look, again, you know this better than I. He seems like an easy personality and a fun personality to be around, right? So I'm sure that that's why other guys gravitate to him. But the defensive part, you're just talking about finishing the play, right? That's what you're talking about, finish the play. And so is some of that, like, maturity and focus? Is that, you know?
I do believe so. We were talking about it actually today. And, just like I asked him, what's the difference, you know? And then he's like, you know what, Alex? I was playing too fast, and I didn't realize that at third base, you have actually more time than what you think, right? The ball gets there quick, and sometimes, you know, the speed of the game got to him. You know, he'll rush into the ball and bobble it, or he will get up so quick and throw it away. And now, you know, he's able to slow it down, to understand that, you know, a one hopper to him, he can take two steps and just put a good throw to first base, and he's out. And, you know, let's be honest with you. Let's be honest, you know, with him, we caught a few, you know, steps of his development. You know, like, he was needed here in 17, well, because of his bat. And, I mean, he hasn't been in the minor leagues for a while, you know, and there were a lot of things that we skip in the process, or the organization skipped during the process. And he's learning on the job how to play third base, you know. And I do believe that what we got now is the real deal. He understands when he missed a ball is because I didn't do this and didn't do that. And he will ask you for 10 more ground balls. So he's more mature. Like I said before, he understands who he is in this game, what he means to our organization. And I love all my kids, you know. I love watching them play. But I'm really looking forward to see what happens this year with Rafi Devers.
Before we get to some other, I just want to ask you one more question about the defense, which was, you know, a lot was made last year. I think Hunter Renfroe was actually a Gold Glove finalist, if I remember right. And so, you know, but at the same time, it felt to me like there were some mistakes there that were made, whether they were overly aggressive throws or what have you. So clearly bringing back Bradley, I mean, that was an area you guys wanted to address.
I mean, obviously in the business side of it and what Haim does, you know, he's always thinking about the present and also the future. And in this trade, and, you know, we love Hunter Renfro. He was a huge part of what we did last year. Some big swings in September. I agree with you. I think he got caught up in the moment sometimes and he made some bad throws. He took some bad decisions, but overall he was very solid. But we got a guy that we do believe he's going to hit righties. Obviously we're going to platoon Jackie. You know, this is a different situation. This is not 18 or 19 that he played against lefties and righties. He will play right field because our center fielder, he's pretty solid too. And I do believe, honestly, Tony, if you hit in the air at Fenway, somebody's going to catch it if the ball doesn't go over the fence. You know, those two guys are gonna do that. And also, I think what Jackie brings to the equation in the clubhouse, it means a lot. You know, it can't get any worse offensively. Last year, it was bad for him, and he's the first one to admit it. And also in the trade, we got two good players, you know, Hamilton and Benelas. We saw them in camp. They were with us in a few games, and we're very excited about them. So it's one of those business decisions that Haim is trying to take advantage of the situation, and we got a good player and two good minor leaguers. And, you know, we're having the luxury right now of having a really good team at the big league level and keep improving our minor league system. And I got to tell you what, we're very excited for our team in the big leagues, but I think this year, minor league-wise, we're going to have a great season too.
Diving effort, that's going to deflect off Rafael in center field. Garcia wants second to play there. He's out. Kike Hernandez with the recovery to cut him down after the ricochet. And out number one.
So excellent awareness here by Kike Hernandez. Again, this ball goes off. It looks like off of Devers' leg. Initially, I thought it was his glove. Kicks into center field. Hernandez, alert, ready to go. Doesn't give up on the play. Makes a quick, accurate throw to second base. Sanchez applies the tag. I mean, that's the kind of awareness you're looking for. Be ready at any time. The ball could get deflected, could come your way. So Hernandez isn't out there picking dandelions like some 9-year-old. He's ready to go, closing in, looking to see how he can impact the play in some way.
Boy, he impacted a whole lot of plays a year ago in center field.
So the outfield defense, I mean, again, over the weekend, there were a handful of plays that were, you know, you had two of them on Sunday, I think it was, where you got two outfield assists throwing guys out on the bases.
The one, and I never seen a play like that. It was Rafi who dove to his left and the ball kicked out to left center. And I think if you're a baseball fan or a high school coach or whatever, you should show the kids how you play the game. Because Kike, who's in center field, he was moving with the play. He goes to the left center gap, bare hands it, throws the second and gets the guy out. The only way you make that play is if you're in tune with the game, that you understand you have to go somewhere. You can't just become a viewer of the game. You have to move. You have to do your thing. And I think Kike in center field, he brings that to the equation. Alex in left field, he knows how to play that wall, right? And he can stop the running game. And obviously Jack in right field, we feel like he can be elite. We're trying to Arroyo in the outfield. He looks comfortable for now. You know, he's going to make some mistakes and he's going to learn his job, but he's a good athlete. We still got JD who we put in the spot and he makes good decisions. So I do believe defensively we should be a lot better than last year.
Okay. And the, you know, since you mentioned Bradley and Devers, one thing I noticed in the games that I've seen a couple of weekends ago, Devers started to square. The defense was shifted against him. He started to square like he was going to bunt. The ball came up and in and he pulled it back. And then Bradley pushed a bunt down the third baseline against the shift yesterday. The pitcher got off the mound pretty well, made the play at first and got him out. But I'm just wondering whether this is organizational. Like now that this is the last year of the shift, I think most everyone's expecting a rule change. But is this at all a point of emphasis, you know, that you say, hey, if it's there and you think you can do it, take it? Or and how do you feel about it, particularly with Devers?
Well, Rafi pushed for this. You know, because he believes that there's certain lefties that they're very uncomfortable and they're going to have the shift and he can just drop it down and walk to first base. As you know, we play in an era that people talk about bunting and dumb bunt, whatever. I think Will Venable, our bench coach, put it perfectly to the players. Obviously, they're always chasing for slug, you know, OPS and all this stuff. And Will is like, well, if you have 10 chances, you know, with the shift, and you're successful five times, that means your on-base percentage is 500. Your OPS is whatever. You know, he explained it perfectly to the players. And he kind of like, oh, that works, you know. And we will do it. We will do it. I don't know if Rafi's going to do it that often, but we would like Jackie to do it because they put the shift. He's a good runner. He just have to get it down and go to first. And in the minor leagues, there's a few guys that we identified throughout the camp that they should do it in minor leagues. I know, I think in certain leagues, they're not going to have the shift. But, I mean, I think we're late to the party, right? It's the last year. But, I mean, one play like that, it can change the game. You know, Jackie Bunts, he's still second. Rumble to second. And sack fly, we score one run. And that can be the difference of winning a game. And as you know, well, winning one more game than the Jays last year or the Mariners or whoever we were playing at the end, it put us in the playoffs.
Before we continue with Alex Cora, just a reminder that you can find the Baseball Hour on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, be sure to check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Our podcasts also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Now, back to Alex Cora. I know you get these questions a lot, but going into the season, if I were to say to you, like, I know what my answer to this question is, but if I were to say to you, what is your biggest concern as a manager, what would you say?
Right now is the bullpen. Right now is the bullpen. We do believe that the starters are okay. The position players are good. Our bullpen right now, stuff-wise, is behind. And probably there's 29 more teams that they're behind bullpen-wise because you didn't have the time to have the back-to-back or the 30 inning or, you know, the two innings one time in spring training. They're still catching up. I was talking to Bushy today. Digman hit 94 today, which is a good sign. Barnes yesterday was a little bit better in the backfields. You know, obviously there's a few guys that they're throwing the ball well, but I do believe – and this is around the league, and we've seen it, you know, facing the Rays and the Braves and everybody. It feels like the relievers are 1 week behind in their progression. You know, they still have some catch-up to do. The good thing is that we have 15 pitchers. We're taking 15 pitchers. I saw that there's two teams probably taking 16. I think New York is doing that, and the Twins are doing that. But that's my biggest concern, not because of the personnel. I think we have some really interesting arms that are going to do the job. But going into the season, I do believe we're like 1 week behind. And it's not lack of preparation. It's just what happened. You know, it was a short spring training. And I think the relievers are the ones paying the price right now.
So, look, I know you got questions a lot down there about, you know, specific roles, like who the closer is and things like that. My question concerns more the big picture, like, you know, you're going in, you say your relievers are behind, you get some new bodies in there. Do you have a good idea of where you want to start with roles, or are you still sort of searching there a little bit because the spring was so compact?
I hope that Thursday doesn't rain in New York and Nate goes five and we bring Witt for four and we win the ballgame. But, you know, we still have to make a decision with Robles. He threw the ball today. He was 96 miles per hour. You know, like he was going at the – he was working out at the Dominican Academy. You know, he passed his physical. He had the contract. He only had visa problems. That's it, you know, and that's the government. So he was doing the job. But we still have decisions to make tomorrow morning. And based on that, then we'll know a little bit more about roles. I tell you what, we do believe Cutter Crawford is going to be important for us, giving us multiple innings. I hate that the people are already comparing him to Garrett Whitlock, who last year, I remember when we were talking a year ago, we mentioned Whitlock in the podcast. And then you were actually high on him right away. You saw it, and I think this kid is going to be good, you know, and hopefully he can turn into Garrett Whitlock. But we like Cutter Crawford the way he is right now, throwing 97. So hopefully he can give us multiple innings. I think, you know, the games will dictate what we do. I honestly, you know, hope that, you know, we can go, hey, Hugo Barnsley, it's you again, you know, and we get the same guy that we had early last year. We do believe with this mechanical flaw that he had, he's going to fix it and he's going to get his fastball back. But I think early on, it's too soon, actually, for me to say, this is the closer, this is the eighth inning guy, this is our lefty guy, you know. We just have to get 27 outs early on and win ball games the way we're structured right now.
I don't like throwing to the same spot right there, though. You can throw a fastball. You better get it on the corner right here.
He did. 95 and a high fly ball deep left field and gone. Springer launching one. A three-run shot to put Toronto in front 9-8.
With regard to Barnes, and look, this is a hard question to ask. I don't remember if you were asked it during the regular season last year or not, but there was obviously a big change in the middle of the season with regard to adhesives and stuff like that. And I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I'm asking the question. You know, Garrett Richards spoke about it pretty openly and said, you know, this is a hard thing to adapt to. Were there other guys on your staff, and was Barnes one of them? Like, was that part of the issue with him, that there was an adjustment, or was it something?
No, I do believe he shied away from the fastball. That was it. I honestly believe that the stuff was still good. We used him a lot. Remember that Toronto series, you know, that they hit two walk-offs of him? Yeah. That was a crazy week because we were short pitching-wise, and we used him a lot. And as you know, you know, that's part of the equation. When you become the dude, you know, when you're the closer, you pitch. But I think we actually push him hard, like for 2 weeks, and we paid the price. We got the numbers. His spin rate is the same. The fastball was the same. But he, for some reason, and we talk about it, we didn't have the same aggressive Barnsley early in the season. You know, early in the season, he was throwing probably like 8 out of 10 pitches in the zone. Later in the season, he became that 50-50 guy, the fastball way up, the breaking ball way down, and he shied away from the strike zone. And when you do that, bad things happen. You know, when he was pounding the strike zone with good stuff, he was really good. So that's something we talk about it. But now I think, you know, stuff was very similar. Maybe as far as his fastball, the characteristics of his fastball, for some reason, he started cutting in the zone instead of rising like he usually does, and the ball stayed, you know, probably in the zone a little bit longer, and guys were able to catch up with it. But besides that, I think his stuff was pretty the same. It's just he shied away from the strike zone, and his fastball was cutting actually instead of rising.
Okay, so I have two more questions for you, then I want to let you go. You've had a long spring, I know, and when I say long, I mean
good, man.
Compact. So there's been a lot going on, and you're in the middle of roster changes and all that stuff, and the season's about to start. But one concern is just relievers in general in this day and age. Because, like, I look at – it just feels, Alex, like there are so few strike throwers. And when I say that, I mean guys who come out of the pen and, you know, walk under three batters per nine innings are in the – yeah, they're all over the place. And I understand everybody wants velocity, but it doesn't do you any good if it's not in the strike zone. And, you know, if you're putting men on, that's not good either. So it just feels to me like teams are willing to accept walks and not hits. And am I reading that right? Or is, you know, or is it just a shortage of guys that can do it?
I think it's more avoid damage, to be honest with you. You know, like we keep talking to the guys that, you know, the more strikes you throw, the more successful you're going to be. You know, and that's in the history of the game. Strike throwers, they get people out, right? You get people out in the strike zone. You have to throw strikes to get people out. But it got to a point, I think, especially in 19, you know, like the damage that it was done, it was amazing. You know, like, honestly, I was watching games from the get-go when we went to Seattle, you know, like, I think Seattle played in Japan that year and they hit a bunch of home runs. And then we played them and they hit a bunch of homers against us. And I was like, wow, this is not similar to last year as far as, like, seems like the ball is flying. And the ball was flying that year. It was. And I think pitchers, instead of being aggressive in the zone with great stuff, they start pitching to the edges. And it was either a strikeout or a walk. That's it, because you're avoiding damage. And it's kind of like playing roulette, right? You just keep going and going and going and take your chances. So, hey, man, 3-2, my best pitch. If I walk you, I walk you, but you're not going to do damage. I'll get the next guy, and I try to strike him out. So that's what happened. But I think little by little, you know, I think the game is getting back to, you know, like a real fair game as far as, like, the ball not jumping. I'm not accusing anybody here, but it feels like the ball is back to being, you know, fair, I guess. So guys are going to start throwing more strikes, and I think we're going to get back to, I don't know when, I'm not saying this year, but I think sooner rather than later, the game is going to get back to people making contact and play, and people making plays, which is the game we love, right? We want guys to make plays. We want guys to put them on play and run the bases and all that. So hopefully sooner rather than later, that's going to come back, because I think the ball is not flying as much and guys are going to be willing to throw strikes again.
Okay, last thing I want to ask you is about Michael Walker, because I did see one of his spring outings. And I remember when he was with St. Louis, Walker used to have this great tilt on his fastball where it was really downhill. Like, you know, I mean, like it was coming in on a slope. Yeah. He was way up here with the, you know, he's basically throwing from up top. The game I saw, he was able to do that more consistently on the third base side of the plate than he was able to do it on the other side of the plate. And so is that by design? In other words, he's throwing two seamers that side and he gets a better angle on it, or, and he's trying to go up in the zone to righties, or because he's a reverse guy, right? Righties hit him better than lefties. And I think he's always been that way. But why is the fastball look one way on one side of the plate and not on the other?
Well, he tries to cut it into lefties. He's a cutter, actually. He still has, he had the four seamer, which is 95, 96. Last year with the Rays, there, you know, I remember preparing for him, and it was very, very simple with him. It was cutters up and away against righties, changeups down and in against righties. Against lefties, it was a lot of cutters, and the changeup. I was watching his last five outings were really good for the Rays. He was throwing hard. He started mixing up his breaking ball to steal strikes. And he was, and this is the game I was watching him against Toronto, and it was a 3-2 count, and Zunino called for a cutter, and he shook him off. You don't see that often with the Rays, you know. It's kind of like, this is what we do, this is what you do, you know. So cutter, no, and I think he threw a four seamer. I think it was Bo Bichette. He walked him, but in that game, he changed his whole game plan. You know, he starts throwing four seamers, the breaking ball, the change of the sinker. He became the pitcher that we used to see with the Cardinals. He became that guy. And I asked him a few weeks ago, I said, hey, what happened in this outing? And I love doing that, because when there's somebody new and you go to one game, they're like, shoot, this guy is paying attention. He knows. Nice. Knows. I did it with Ottavino last year, and I did it with Michael, and he explained me why. And that's why you see the sinker and you see the cutter. But I do believe, and I'm with you, his four-seamer, he will play. Because he, Tony, he's 6'6".
You're right.
Wait till you see him. You're like, wow, you know, like, well, wait till you see all these guys. We got dudes now, you know. Like, we're not the short guys, whatever, trying to throw the ball. We got dudes up there. Even Rich Hill, you know, he's a
6'5".
Big dude. You got Witt, you know, and you got Chris and Paxton and all that. We got, like, old-school, you know, horses, you know, on the mound. But I think his angle helps him, and that change of play. So I'm excited about him, man. I used to love him with the Cardinals. You know, what he did in 13 in the playoffs was amazing. He was banged up a little with the Mets. Last year he finished strong. And he's one of these guys that, like I said, you know, like Whitlock last year, he was coming from a classy organization, right, from the New York Yankees. They do it right. He knows how to act, you know, in the clubhouse, in the training room. And Michael Wacha comes from the St. Louis Cardinals, you know. That's where he grew up. And you got to see him, man. He's a great guy. He understands the game. And, you know, also looking forward to him to see him pitch and see where he takes us.
I mean, look, I'd be lying if I told you. I didn't, you know, I went and looked at his pitch breakdown, right? And early in his career, he was throwing a lot more fastballs. So the last couple of years, it was like 40% fastballs. He's throwing a lot of cutters, and the numbers against right-handers were off the charts. So I was looking at it saying, well, why are you throwing cut fastballs to right-handers if your regular fastball was so good early in your career? So yeah. It just felt like his – and I heard you make a comment like, I don't know, maybe a week ago where you said, we think it was a repertoire thing, you know? Yes. And so clearly, like, I mean, it's just – I don't know. It struck me that pitch selection with him makes a difference because – he, you know, he was back in 2013. I thought he was going to be a stud.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I know he had some injuries in there too.
I remember him pitching, and you know, you go back to the Cardinals. You know, Carpenter and Wainwright. You know, you're like, this kid is going to be like those guys, right? And he's only 30, by the way. He's only 30, so you know, hopefully he puts everything together this year. He can help us, and he can take off, and you know, he should be fine. You know, nothing, you know, I think the Rays, they have their thoughts about the cutter. We still like the cutter, but we like the other pitches too. So kind of like Nate, right? Like Nate, he's becoming this guy with five pitches, and he's so tough to like guess with him and look for certain pitches because you don't know when he's going to throw that breaking ball, that slide or the split. And Michael can do that. And hopefully, you know, he has a great season for us.
Well, look, Alex, listen, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it, and best of luck to you this year.
Tony, happy to have you with us, honestly. You know, I know a lot of people in Boston are excited to have you in the booth. You know, we respect you. You know the game. And so looking forward to see you at Fenway and chat more baseball, okay?
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, you say that now. We'll see how it goes in a couple of months.
It's okay. My family won't take it personal, man.
That's the conclusion of our interview with Alex Cora. Thanks for listening. Just a reminder, the Baseball Hour show, the program, will return on Wednesday, April 6th will be the first night. And you can obviously listen to the program weeknights from 6 to 7 throughout the baseball season right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. So thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.